Welcome to the LTW Fancast with me, Jess Bunyard.
And me, Jacob Basford.
Hello from what is a very cold Yorkshire, but no snow. I'm extremely disappointed. Unless Jacob, you're joining to tell me that there is snow in York, please give
No,
me giddy news.
there is no snow in York, I'm afraid, but it is
That's
cold. It's about 2, 2, 2, 3 degrees, which has been quite odd. Obviously we've had such a mild start to the new year and a mild Christmas, and for it to suddenly go really, really cold has been a bit weird. But I can't say I've noticed that much, because I've either been strained to my sofa on my computer, or I've been in the library on my computer. So yeah, that's sort of what I've been up to. But anyway, how are you, Jess? If the listeners aren't aware, we met for the first time in person on Saturday.
Yeah, and I didn't completely spill my pie all over me. So it was a great success, really, the day. It was great to finally meet in person and to be at the game, to be at the double header, which I thought was overall a really, really good occasion. There were, I think, more people in the crowd than last time, but if you remember last time for that last double header, it did bucket it down. I was seriously, seriously cold after. So the fact that it wasn't raining, I think, definitely helped with crowd numbers. Although I am disappointed that now it's gone cold again and I'm due to start coaching outside. So I'm coaching tonight with my women and girls section, two sessions. So I've got the girls first and then the senior women's team after. And it's only now as the temperature's decided to plummet, which is, it'd be fine. Will I be in shorts? Probably, yes.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. I don't miss the late night the late night evening trainings in the middle of winter. They were never fun. I was always in full thermals and stuff. I even had at one point I even had Andy Goode style gloves, just because
Commitment.
my hands got so cold. But yeah, anyway, well, like I said, it was a good game on Saturday against the double header. It was just a great day in general. I loved it. I thought the Saris game was absolutely brilliant. Really, really good atmosphere. And yeah, it was really good to see that, because this was my first time ever seeing the girls in action on Saturday, like live in the flesh, which is really, really good. I loved it. I thought, obviously we'll get into the game a bit more later. But it was a really good occasion, and we can only hope that those crowds continue to grow, because that was a bigger crowd than from the Loughborough Lightning double header. I mean, obviously we can't get official figures because it's quite hard to count that kind of thing on a double header. Like, obviously, are people coming in, are people leaving, then coming back. So, I appreciate the practicality issues of getting an attendance figure on that. But no, it was a really good occasion. So yeah, we've got an excited podcast lined up for us, haven't we, Jess?
So we're going to be going through that Quinns match review, and it was agonizingly close to a win, agonizingly close. So we're going to go into that. I've managed to dig up some stats from PWR, which is good. Obviously, we're going to chat about scrums, but we are going to chat about other stuff as well. Then I'm going to run you through the PWR results, and then I've also pulled some stats for sort of the overall season, so we can see what the trends are, and is there more ball in play time in this league? Is there a high quality of rugby? Are we seeing lots of tries? So I'll pull some stats on that.
We are also delighted to be joined by the co-host of our Elder Sister podcast, Mike Cooper from the Rolling Moor, for a quick chat on the Leicester Tigers women's team as well. So that's coming up later in the pod as well. That's going to be really, really good. Thanks again for that, Mike.
And then we're going to go through some of the new stuff. If you're not aware, it was in the news recently about the number of international players and the number of non-English qualified players you can have in your match day squad kind of was brought into the news. So we're going to chat about that. We're also going to do a player profile on Talia Brody because thank goodness we are back in the forwards. So I feel on slightly firmer ground. So we got some information. We're going to chat about her and then Drum roll, we're going to have an interview as well from Churchy Knight. I'm chatting to her later on today, so that's going to be included in the podcast, which is really, really exciting. She's someone who's been here, you know, part of the women's team from the beginning, which is really, really cool. And we're also going to drum roll build up to the Bristol game at home, which will be on TNT. So if you're unable to go, but we do urge you to go, you can also stay home and watch it on TNT, which is really, really exciting. So that is, I'm going to say it, that is our bumper podcast episode coming your way.
So before we start our match review, we've actually got a shout out to do. We've actually got two shout outs to do. So firstly, shout out to Jamie Callahan and his son, part of the community staff at Leicester Tigers. You know, we had a good old long chat with them at the game on Saturday, which is really, really good to see. It's really heartwarming to see that, you know, the players are listening to this and that the staff are all listening to this. Which is heartwarming, but then was also slightly embarrassing because I realised that they all knew about me and Macbeth and stuff, and I was like, "Oh yeah," So that was a bit sort of like, "Whoa." But anyway, yeah, shout out to Jamie. That was really, really nice. We got some really good insight into kind of how some of the practicalities of a match day, specifically for the women's game, in terms of prep and the balls and all that kind of thing. So yeah, thanks for that. And then also, because after the game, like all the players, both Harlequins and Leicester Tigers women's players, came up to the Tradeview stand. So we all had a quick natter with the players before we chatted off. You know, shout out to Laggy Tuima for having a quick chat with us as well. I thought it was really nice that we could get a nice conversation with the Harlequins players as well. That was really, really lovely. And, you know, that's really, really good to see. And, you know, it was really good to talk about what we were doing briefly and stuff. So it's good to see the support from that on both sides. So, you know, shout out to Laggy if you are listening by any chance. We did give you the name of the podcast. So, yeah, that was really, really brilliant. And I did just quickly, I did manage to get a quick two-word conversation with Fran McGee, and I don't think I thought I was professional, so I think that was good. I did kind of like turn to Jess afterwards. I was like, oh my god, I just spoke to Fran, oh my god.
On that, actually, I failed to mention probably the most, partially one of the most exciting bits of Saturday for me, is that I don't know why I haven't done this before. I got a ball from the shop and I was like, you know what? I'm going to try and get all the players to sign it. So one half of the ball I'm aiming to get most of the men's squad to sign the ball, and they're going to sign it in a black pen. And then on the flip side, I'm going to aim to get the women's team to sign that and sign it in a red pen. So shout out to Fran, because she was the first player from the women's squad to sign my rugby ball. And also shout out to Joe Hayes, who was the first one from the men's team to sign my ball as well. But I felt slightly unprofessional at one point, because we were having a conversation as the Tigers women's players were warming up, and I saw Jasper Visa walk round, and I just kind of got up and left and went to get Jasper's signature. I think mid-conversation with you, me and my dad, I was like, I'm gone. I've got to get that signature. But yeah, so shout out to Fran, and thank you for kind of being the first one to sign that ball, because it's kind of the first PWR season for the women's team, and it feels, what if I could get all the players from both squads to sign that ball? That would be something to really add to the fangirl Tigers collection stuff that I own. So yeah, but you were very professional with Fran. You did turn afterwards and go, ah, I just spoke to Fran. But you were professional.
Yeah, thanks Jess. Thanks. No, it was good. And don't worry about Jasper, like I would have probably done the exact same thing. So
I just got up and just bolted. I was just gone.
as you should. It's Jasper Visa. So yeah, but anyway, so that's our shout outs done. So on to the match review. Before we get into it, I think if you kind of think like overall, I thought it was really positive, actually. Yes, there was disappointment, and we'll get into the nitty-gritty of some aspects where potentially there were some things that did cost us quite dearly, and we were in a shout of at least getting 2 points. At one point, you think, "Oh, we're gonna win!" Like, and obviously, we'll get more into that as we go on. But I think we have to start off with the positives, and it was a good game of rugby overall. I think all the people that were there really enjoyed it. There was, like we said, there was a solid crowd there. Can't give you an exact figure. I would say at least 2,500, 3,000 people ish. It's quite hard to count in such a big stand like the Trade View, and everyone sort of, there was a clump towards the middle, but there were like sporadic people across the entire stand. So it's quite hard to give the listeners an accurate figure. But as you said, it was a great occasion. I really enjoyed it. Jess really enjoyed it. Jess's dad, David, really enjoyed it as well. It was really good to chat with you guys all throughout the game and stuff. And I was being very professional. I was being the student journalist that I am, taking down notes. Which again, shout out to Jamie. He pointed out. So if you are listening, Jamie, this is the result of my note taking. But it isn't the LTW fan cast if we don't start off with talking about scrums. So this is something that we have been talking a little bit about before in terms of potential concerns about closing the gap between sort of championship level and PWR level in terms of us adjusting to scrums at the top level. And Quins are a very solid unit in that area, I would say. Obviously, they've got Bryony Cleal, they've got Letashwa, who is one of the Springbok players. She's like one of the Springbok pops props. She's very, so they've got depth in that area as well. But we thought that the scrums were actually quite a lot better, and that obviously, yes, it struggled a little bit, creaked a little bit towards the end, and we'll probably go into it a little bit afterwards, and it perhaps did cost us at the end. But like throughout the game before then, it really did stand up for Quins. I think that the girls have really got to take that going forward. I mean, what are your initial thoughts on that, Jess?
Yeah. Pleased with the improvements. It did cost us, I think, vital possession at the end. I think having Kaiame at flank definitely seems to have given us a bit more stability at that engage period to hold pressure, to absorb pressure. I don't think, and this isn't a criticism of referees or of any individual referee. It's something I've noticed because I'm a scrum nose. Different referees have different pacings of when they're calling the scrum and when they're calling the set and the engage. The ref at the weekend seemed to have a really long hold period before the scrum was actually together and before there was an engage. And you're asking a lot of eight players, particularly props, to hold themselves like locked and loaded, ready to go. So I don't think that benefited either packs. And
Yeah.
that's something I would like to see looked at, not just in the women's game and not just with any individual referees, but with men's and women's games and overall referees. I really would like to see a bit more of a consistent pacing. Everybody talks about how can we make the scrums entertaining to people and speed up the process? How can we reduce resets? Well, actually having a consistent rhythm and timing to the referee's calling would probably aid with the in reducing the resets for me. There was one moment I'm going to talk about, but I think you're going to add some context because we had to have a change, didn't we, in the warm-up. There was a we lost a player, which I think we lose a prop that really does impact on us prior to the game because you're asking people to put in immense shifts. I think so. Kaiame started out flank, and then I think she went to prop at one point as well when there were replacements. So I looked at the stats. She did a full 80, I think,
Yeah, she did, I think.
at flank and then at prop, which is like stupid. That's insane.
Yeah.
I don't. It really, really, really is. Yeah, I've just pulled up the stats. She played for full 80. That's immense to start a flank and then move to prop and have a full 80. That's tremendous. That speaks volumes about actually possibly an indication that our fitness is improving overall, which I know some people had highlighted as a potential concern because the gap between the champ and the PWR. It was a problem at one point, but I think we were tired due to the changes, the force changes that we had to make because we lost our own scrum possession. They just drove us backwards, and I think because they were driving us backwards, our hooker was under so much pressure, she was unable to lift her foot to strike the ball. So that is something that was really targeted well by Quinns. They got their pushing really spot on, put us under a lot of pressure. But for me, that's a now vast improvement from where we were. Where we were having an inability to sustain pressure, looking really creaky. Now we can sustain the pressure and we need to build a solid platform to then work on our go forward or to at least make sure that our hooker feels safe and secure enough to lift her foot to strike the ball. Yeah, those are my thoughts. Jacob, do you want to go into, because you spotted the force change before I'd noticed it. I think you'd spotted it in the warm-up or you'd noticed something. Do you want to go into more detail about that?
Yeah, so if listeners are unaware, because it wasn't made clear in the match report, and if you go on the Tigers website, they didn't make the change. Basically, what happened was that in the warm up, Ugiagbe was named to start at tight head prop, and then I did notice she was sort of looking a bit. She was kind of a bit separate from the other people and chatting to one of the coaches, and then. Just as the players were coming out onto the pitch, the announcer said that there's been a late change and Ugiagbe's had to pull out. And the person named a replacement prop, Lisa Cockburn, was starting. And I think because the change was so last minute, obviously there was no other props that had warmed up. So then that meant that Cockburn at 18 had to do as much as she could. And then Sagapolu had to come in from flanker to then come back in at tight head to see out the game. So I
Yeah,
think,
Lisa played 51 minutes, which
yeah.
is, you know, which is outstanding. And then Kaya May went up and replaced her as prop, and we brought on a flank replacement to kind of adjust the back row. I mean, the good news is with having Kaya May at flank, we're always ticking the front row requirements because you have to have a certain number of people trained in your front row. Like I have to have it when I was coaching books uni teams, you had to have it then. There's loads of kind of requirements of what you're supposed to have for trained front row players. So the advantage of having a prop at flank is we're always ticking those front row trained boxes. So we're good on the regulation side of things, and it means that in a case of emergency like this, we can shift people about, which is a positive.
Which is positive. And to that, I think shout out to the team. I think they adjusted really, really well to that late change. That could be something that could knock you back. I mean, obviously, if you're a replacement prop and suddenly, you've done a bit of a warm-up and then suddenly you've got to go straight off, that could be both mentally and physically quite a change. And I think we do have to give a shout out to Lisa Cockburn. I think she did really, really well to last the full 50. The scrum was really solid. When she was on, and yeah, I think it obviously because of and we do have to think that maybe because of that change, had Ugiagbe not been able to pull out, we might have been able to have shored up our scrum more at the end. Because if listeners are unaware, for context, basically, I think Quinns had like a knock on or a not straight line out, and then we were sort of like we were just in our half, and we were 2 points down at this point, and I think. I think we're both sort of thinking, okay, this is a really good fill position. We could either get something at the scrum or we could kick downfield and keep Quinns in their own half. And then obviously, yeah, they just, I mean, yeah, to be fair, shout out to Quinn, shout out to particularly Letashwa at 18. She was very, very prominent in the loose as well as in as a scrummager as well, popping, keeping the ball alive with offloads and pop passes and that kind of thing. So yeah, that was the real turning point, and unfortunately, it felt like the turning point when they sort of scrummed us off our own ball and got the penalty, and then they kicked that into touch and put us under pressure to get that that winning score, which kind of was a bit deflating, because we, as I say, we're only 2 points down at that point. There was still a bit of time. There was sort of like 6, 7 minutes, and that was good field position off that scrum. But outside of that, I think the girls did do really well to adjust to that really, really last minute change. And hopefully, fingers crossed that it was nothing serious from Ugiagbe, that she can be back soon. And but overall, I think we were pretty happy with that scrum. I was particularly interested in how Sagapolo was sort of was driving her technique on driving on the blind side, because that is a skill. You've got to get that right, because you don't want to be pushing the prop too high. You want to be getting the right amount of power through. And I was pretty happy that she was doing that as well. And I think we can talk about Sagapolo more lately, because again, she was just everywhere and was really, really prominent in the carry. She was absolutely steaming through people. She was putting in some massive hits as well. She was absolutely crunching people. So, another really, really, really good game from Sagapolu there. But yes, that's scrums. But we'll go on to the other forward base set piece, which is lineouts. There was a couple that went awry, including one straight in front of us, which you did kind of jinx a little bit, Jess, because
Sorry, sorry, everybody. Sorry.
we were like, oh, this is great field position. Our lineout's going really, really well. And yeah, it was just a bit of a, I think the timings weren't quite right, and it was a bit overthrown. But aside from that, our lineout again was really, really clicking. I think, that's a shout out to the entire pack, but particularly again, Ellis Martin. She's playing really, really well. I mean, obviously, we're talking about, fans are talking about when we're going to see Amy Kincaid. We are going to address that a little bit later in the pod. But obviously, Amy Kincaid is a Red Rose superstar, but Ellis Martin has been playing really, really well. And that's exciting, because that's going to force Amy Kincaid to basically force her out, so that we're going to see, that's going to bring out the best of Amy Kincaid. And that's also going to bring out the best of Ellis Martin, because she has been playing out of her skin. And I'm really, really excited to see that competition going forward.
Ellis played for the full 80 as well, so she put in another heck of a shift playing for full 80. So yeah, I'm continuously impressed with Ellis Martin. She's a really, really classy player.
Yeah, so that's going to be a really good battle, I think, between the two of them going forward. But interestingly, I think just quickly, Jess, on having Amy Kincaid back, like, if listeners aren't aware, she was in the warm up. I did put it on our socials. She wasn't part of the warm up per se, and that she was running drills with everyone, and that she was, doing in all of the exercises. She was basically sort of running on her own, doing her own sort of fitness drills. So that indicates to us that she is not far away. We can't give you guys an exact figure, but hopefully we're going to see Amy Kincaid. And I think, going back to scrum issues, potentially having, a Red Rose superstar who has scrummed at the highest level. I know obviously she's a hooker, but we've got to remember that the hooker is an essential part of that front row unit. I think that could also not only help our set piece and just our ball carrying in general, but I think our scrum will improve as well when Ava Kane comes back.
Yeah, massively. I do want to speak about the role in Maul, our driving Maul, because it was immense. It's become a real weapon for us over the past couple of weeks, and we saw it on Saturday for the Quins game. I think at one point we basically had a Maul, and it felt like players were like at full sprint in that Maul. It was sort of directly opposite where we were sitting in the trade view stand, and it I think I got so excited I physically told you to write that I had said motored it
Yes.
the Maul motored, but it really did. It was like, I don't know if you remember it the way I remember it, but I was like, wow. And I think I swore because I was so impressed with the speed we were getting, but also the cohesiveness more, because not only were we moving at such speed, with pace, but we were also still a tight unit moving at pace, which is really quite a skill. That's become a real weapon for us, which, you know, for anybody that knows like the Tigers brand and the Tigers way of playing, it's nice to have that familiarity across the men's and women's squad of a similar attacking weapon, which is really pleasing. And, you know, it's iconic Tigers weapon in attack now, really singing across both teams, which is pleasing.
Yeah, no, if listeners aren't aware, this is the Talia Brodie score, which, again, we might talk about this a bit later. If you watch on the PWR highlights, for some reason they've not put some of our scores and they've not put some of Quinn's score. So we're on about the Talia Brodie score. Now, if you weren't at the game and you haven't read the match report, you've not well not even even if you have read the match report, like it's and this is a frustrating thing for us because you're going to have to take our word for gospel here, but it really was a hell of a set piece move. I mean, basically, so yeah, it was Talia Brodie's score, and it was a similar. We've done a similar move before, where again, great drills from the pack, great throw from Ellis, and then you know we got the lifter in the air. I believe it was Charlotte Frey, and we threw right to the tail, and then. We did really well at the set, so you know the jumper was brought down quickly. We hit in, and because all our drills were on the money, absolutely on the money, we completely caught Quinns off guard. And we really did motor over that line to get and Talia Brodie, who we're going to talk about in our player profile, she dotted down. So that was really really good to see. I think a final thing on lineouts, which I noticed just on defence. Especially in the first half on Quinn's throw, we had Morgan Richardson, our open side flanker, as the front lift option, which I thought was an interesting tactic because Richardson's not the tallest of flankers, and we were putting on Quinn's defensive lineouts, we were putting our tallest jumper, be that Eva Donaldson in the first half or Charlotte Frey in the second half. They were both right at the back. Which I'm not sure what the tactic was there. Was it about the defending the driving maul? But Quinn's set piece was misfiring a little bit against Gloucester, and it wasn't brilliant in terms of the actual line-out drill. Their maul was pretty effective, but their actual line-out drill was struggling. So I was a bit surprised that we weren't going in like competing in the air as much, which I think disappointed me. A little bit, but no, I think our in terms of our driving maul and our line out drills when it's our throw in, they were really 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 good. And yeah, it's really really pleasing to see that not only were we scoring amazing tries like the Meg Jones try and the Frang McGee try, which were both insane, we were also scoring two really good driving maul tries as well.
So I wanted to talk about the Fran McGee score, which I think is up for try of the week from PWR, I think. I'm second guessing myself there. Jacob, I'm looking to you. Is it nominated? Do I know what I'm talking about? Am I
I'm not.
speaking English?
Let's put it this way. It should be nominated for Try of the
It should be
Week.
nominated. It should. Yes, let's go with that. So let's talk about this try because it is amazing. It happened basically right in front of us as well. We really
Yeah.
looked out on where we were sat. Yeah, because I normally sit, where am I? Second row in the trade view stand. And we've moved down to the front row because nobody was in the front row and we sat there. So this basically happened just right in front of us. So Magic Meg puts in a lovely little like crossfield kick, like a kick pass, essentially, crossfield to Fran. Fran, I thought, she judged this really well because she could have charged forward, let the ball bounce. The ball would have bounced over her head, and Quinns would have been in
Yeah.
the end, basically, because of the defender. So she kind of perfectly times her run and just kind of judges where the ball's going to go. It bounces, it springs up perfectly into her hands. She then, and I was astounded about her pace the entire game. She just basically
Yeah.
has the sprint speed to run past defenders. She just can switch on the gas and she's gone. So she switches on the gas, she's gone, and she scores. And I thought that was, that for me was really, really exciting. It showed how on wing defense, they were giving Fran possibly too much space. You're a Quinn's defensive coach, you're probably looking back at that and going, we gave her way too much space. Because I remember, and I might be incorrectly remembering this and getting way too overexcited and emotional at seeing this score in front of me, but I remember the Quinn's defense being quite narrow and giving Fran a lot of space in front of her, which is fair enough as a wing defense because you can run at an angle and use the touchline. But with Fran's pace, she's got the ability to run around you. So for me, I felt they gave her a little bit too much time and a little bit too much space, which worked well in our favor because Meg has the vision to look up, see the space, see it's on, do this beautiful crossfield kick pass. And again, Fran could have quite easily overrun and butchered it and had the ball bounce and go over her head, and Quinns would have been in the other end. So I thought it was lots of lovely little examples of skills just linking together in that try, and it all happened right in front of us. It was beautiful.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was so good. I mean, the kick from Magic Meg, like under pressure as well. I mean, you'd notice that the Quinn's defense was narrow. That was because they were shooting up, and under pressure, Meg Jones executes that kick really well. And yeah, I can't really emphasize enough how well Fran did, because she let the ball bounce, and it wasn't an easy catch. She still sort of caught it, sort of relatively above her head, and then had the pace and power to sort of get round the covering Quinn defender, the Quinn's defenders. And it was a superb score. And if you do go on the PWR highlights, you can see two people, which is me and you, Jess, sort of like just absolutely like, well, the camera sort of pans, which kind of saves us a little bit, but you can tell that it's us, because we both sort of like launch out of our seats as she collects the ball and runs in. But it's a fantastic, fantastic score. And you know, yeah, we're not entirely sure if it is nominated for Trial Week. It should be, but I think we can talk about Fran in general. I mean, you might say I'm talking about her too much, but she was generally, I'm surprised she wasn't on Trial of the Week as well, on Team of the Week as well as Magic Meg, because she was really dangerous all game. She was beating defenders. Like, she's quick, but she's got agility, she's got power, she's got a quite nice sort of, she's a well-balanced runner, she's got a handoff. You know, she was really, really dangerous all game. And you know, and I think what was really, really good was that we were giving her the ball in space. We were getting the ball to her. We weren't just, you know, she wasn't doing it all on herself. We were giving her the platform as well, which was really, really good to see. I think, you know, and this is where, again, we can talk about Magic Meg, but also Captain Stash and also Sarah Nicholas at outside centre. That's three really, really effective distributors that we had in our back line, and they were all offering something different to Quinn's. Like, we saw Stash like take it up herself and get over the gain line. You know, Magic Meg was putting in footwork and switching it up, and Sarah Nicholas was really, really solid as well, which meant that we were getting the ball to Fran, and she was looking dangerous. I think the only thing for us is that potentially we didn't, especially in the first half, we didn't have the ball enough. Quinn's had the ball too much, which I think gave Quinn's opportunities, which put our defense under pressure. And we're going to come down as to why that kind of happened a little bit later in terms of our discipline at the breakdown and stuff. But I think whilst that was disappointing, when we did have the ball in attack, we were looking threatening. And I would also say that once we weren't getting in their 22 enough, but once we did, we were clinical, which is also really, really good to see as well.
Yeah, I think if we're being really, let's be really, 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 really clinical here and objective. We could have won that game. That on its own is exciting. I don't think we've quite had that feeling on this pod before, and it shows the immense improvements we're making in such a short space of time. If we're looking at two things that cost us, for me, it was the lack of possession that we had in the first quarter, and it was that scrum
Yeah.
that won against the head. Possession stats, they had 60% of the possession and we had 40. And they conceded 8 penalties and we conceded a whopping 13. And I think most
Yeah.
of those were conceded in the first quarter. I mean, let's get into that. We were pinged a few times for not rolling away. And I
Yeah.
think that was the majority of what we were pinged for. And what's pleasing for me is how we reacted, saw that information, and then started to present the ref with the picture that they wanted to see. So that's improving, because when I'm never expecting of any team is to instantly go to a game and know how the referee's immediately going to ref things and see things and then be able to display that picture 100% of the time. The best thing you can ask a team to do, any team, men or women, is to adapt to what they're seeing in front of them, which isn't just referring to the team they're playing against, but also referring to how the referee wants to ref the game and how they want to see the game. So it's really, really pleasing that we adapted, saw that happening, and put those changes in. Would I have liked to have seen that quicker? Yes, but that is something that will come over time as this team plays more together and learns and adapts more together. High penalty count is something we've spoken about before, as something we've got to really,
Yeah.
really work on. And it potentially cost us that game, because it gave Quins, they just moved up the pitch too easily because of that. And our defence was amazing. It was amazing. Once, however, Quins got into our 22, it kind of felt really obvious that they were going to score. It felt like it was just always going to happen. It was the obvious conclusion every time they moved up into our 22. Prior to that, our defence was much, much better. I think we fronted up, and especially against the likes of like Burford, Cleal, Brown, that's not an easy task. I don't know why once teams get into our 22, we're struggling. Is it a mental switch? Is it fatigue in defence because we're working so hard prior to that? I mean, we did make an amazing amount of successful tackles. So Quinn's made 86 successful tackles and we made 175. So
Yeah.
that's going to play a part. We are going to fatigue quite rightly because that's an amazing amount of tackles to have made. I just think we can make things so much easier on our defence by just tightening up on those penalties in that
Yeah.
first quarter. Because I think if we're being really, really clinical and doing it with love because we want this team to succeed, I think where we need to tighten up is in that first quarter, looking at penalties. Can we adapt quicker to the referee? But that's something that will just come with time. It just will, the more they play together, train together, and sorting out that scrum. Those are the two kind of things for me that lost us that game. But to be chatting about the game with this perspective of, oh, these are the two things that lost us that game, and it was so
Yeah.
close. At one point we were within 2 points and we really looked like winning it. I'm so pleased and proud and excited that we're now talking about games in those terms.
Yeah.
And this is
Yeah.
Harlequins. Like, they've been past champions. They've got to the league finals in past years. They've got a ton of red roses in their squad. That's not an easy task, and for us to be talking about the game with this perspective is really, really pleasing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think obviously that was a great stat you gave us there. A lot of those tackles were really, really big tackles, big double tackles as well. Like obviously last week in the pod, I was talking about how Quins were looking to get Bryony Cleal over the game line, quick pick and goes. They were never doing that. We were really physical in that area. And it just meant that they never sort of broke us down in that area. It was just kind of they were slightly better as with some offloads, and they were, I think two times they broke through our line with a big wide pass off either the fly half Scott or the centre Tuima, and they broke through our line, and we weren't able to recover properly. I think for the Ellie Kildon try, Tess Fury at 14, she did have a really good game. She was really physical. Her back play on kicks was really solid. She got a great turnover penalty. But on the Kildon try, she just shoots up far too early, and she unfortunately it like Quinn's. It's just too easy for Quinn's to get around her shooting up, and like that's and it was just so inevitable that Kildon was going to score on that try, unfortunately.
Well,
But
I think when you're playing Ellie Kildon, it's probably inevitable she's going to score anyway. But you said something really interesting about the offloads, and I too have a stat about offloads. So to kind of put it in perspective, I do think we wrapped up Cleo really well in defence. My thoughts around that is we didn't quite do the same to Shauna Brown. But again, that's not an easy task to try and wrap up Shauna Brown and stop her from giving Quinns that go forward ball. We had six offloads and Quinns had 18, which I think demonstrates what kind of attack Quinns are trying to play with. Use those strong ball carriers, get over the gain line, little offload, get go forward. So it's a shame we didn't stop those offloads, but I think the fact that they offloaded so much and then we made 175 successful tackles probably indicates we were doing pretty well at reading those offloads and making the tackle after that. Which casting my mind back is I think we did that really well. I would like
Yeah,
to
no, I
see
agree.
us do a bit more of an offloady game, particularly if we've got Stash taking the ball into contact and getting over the gain line, which she did really successfully against Quinns. Could she throw in a cheeky little offload to somebody? Have somebody looping around? I think I said a few times when somebody got beyond the gain line and was just at the point of being tackled that there needed to be somebody on a player's shoulder just receiving a pass. And I think that's the next, is that the next improvement that we'd like to see? Just having that person on the shoulder. But again, that kind of stuff just comes with overall game sense as a team. That and the more they train and play together, this group of players, the better that will be, because that is it's kind of intuitive, instinctive style of play. You've got to put some maybe games in at training if I was doing it with my lot and encourage some offloads because you've got to get them doing that kind of way of thinking but it's playing together. In a way that encourages offloads and it'll string it together. It does mean you might increase your likelihood of drop balls, of knock-ons, of stuff like that. But if we've got people that are so very successful in getting over the gain line, Kaime, Stash, adding some offloads in there would help because I think six offloads in 80 minutes is that's quite low in terms of attacking. I'd like to see a bit more, but I love an offload style of play, so that could be just me with my bias in there. But I think we've got the possibility to do it. I think we've got the players to do it, particularly as you talked about Stash getting over the gain line, taking some hits, and having some Bosch kind of style of rugby. I think it's something we could look to add now that we're starting to get some really, really solid foundations in attack.
Yeah, no, I agree because I remember you saying during the game there were quite a few opportunities where you're like, oh, she just needs someone on her shoulder, and yeah, that was the case. I think, yeah, it's a balancing act because again, we're talking about KMA because she was really good, and she was doing a few pop passes. I think the unfortunate thing for that is just Quinn's read that really well, especially in the second half, and it.
It had obviously been something they'd looked at in their pre-match analysis, and quite right so. They've done their homework on that. They know sometimes she likes to carry it up, sometimes she likes to do a little bit of a tip-on pass. So they'd obviously analysed that and done that, really well. Fair
You
play
know,
to
which again,
Queens.
shout out to Quinns. And then also, I distinctly remember one of the times I think we made a bit of a line break. We were offloading, but we threw like a wild pass. Quinns intercept it, and then they switch on really into attack. They put some offloads in. There was a forward pass that wasn't picked up, but then Quinns a few phases later to Quinn's score. So and because there's no video evidence of that try, I can be I can you can take my word for it that that my Crumbyite one-eyed vision picked up a forward pass in there. But yeah, so I think that's also the thing as well. I think that was quite a key moment. We were looking dangerous, sort of like just on the verge of their 22, making a headway on the sort of the Crumbie side of the pitch towards their try line, and then and then unfortunately they turned it over and scored through offloads of their own. But you know, aside from that, I think attack was really good. It was really clicking. Obviously, there's a really good targeted a really good close-up footage of Meg Jones's score, which was superb skill under pressure. You know, we all know because all the clubs like to moan about it. Our dead ball area isn't that deep, but it means that to execute that kind of skill under pressure is really, really difficult to do. And yeah, it's just so good from our own Magic Meg, and also Jess. The official Tigers women's account and the Tigers account that reposted it and the Rolling Mall all used our nickname Magic Meg.
We would like 10% of we were like naming rights. No, I think it I think look, I think it's awesome that these nicknames are being picked up, and it's really, really important for, you know, for players to have nicknames like this that are across on social media. Means it's, you know, fans feel more connected to players, all of that stuff. So it's really, really good. I also can confirm, because while you were chatting, I did a little bit of a Google. Fran is nominated for Try of the Week, and it's her third Try of the Week nomination.
Wow.
Oh, that's pretty impressive.
So, before we crack on with the rest of our pod, we're going to take a quick look at our top Tiger time. And I did kind of technically cheat a little bit by responding on my own personal account, because I just wanted to talk about the fact that me and Jess did get to quickly meet Fran McGee as well as all the other players. And again, another shout out to Laggy Tuima. If you are listening, Laggy, thank you again for that conversation. That was really, really lovely. And you know, best of luck for the rest of the season. But we do actually have some proper top Tiger times. So thank you so much to everyone who has contributed and continues to contribute. First, we've got Julie Atkinson with Has to Be Try by Meg Jones, another cracker. Yeah, Julie, absolutely. I mean, look at looking at the official Leicester Tigers women's account, they published a video of that try from behind the goalpost. That looked really, really cool. And yeah, just another example of pure skill and another example of just the class that Meg Jones is bringing to our back line and is bringing to our club as a leader. And yeah, I think that try exemplifies but doesn't show all of how like generally good she was against Quinns on Saturday. So thank you very much for that, Julie. And then shout out to Jonathan Pugh. If you're listening, Jonathan, thank you so much for this contribution as well. Just talking about, yes, indeed, I think there was real belief today that they had Quinns under the cosh for a good period. KMA looks great in the back row, really putting herself about and making a nuisance. Absolutely, Jonathan. Yeah, like, couldn't agree with you that more, mate. I think KMA was really, really good to do what she was doing at blindside flanker and then moving up to scrum. I mean, she's just an incredible all-round athlete. I'm not entirely sure yet where she's going to be moving forward. Is it going to be blindside flanker? Is it going to be tighter prop? But one thing is for certain, she's going to be a superstar in this Leicester Tigers women's team, and I can't wait to see more as she grows into the team and develops more as the season goes on. So really, really exciting. And finally, we're going to have a comment from Chris Haywood. Thanks to this, Chris, if you're listening, great bloke. We've been interacting on Twitter for what seems like years now. Chris says, and get the ball to Fran McGee as much as possible. Game-changing pace. Whole backline seemed to gel at times tonight. Positive steps. Yeah, absolutely, Chris. You know, I don't want to talk too much about Fran, because the girl I'm seeing might have something to say about that. But anyway, yeah, she definitely has game-changing pace. And yeah, I completely agree that the backline was really gelling at points during the Quinns game. And yeah, it's definitely positive steps forward. So that is top Tiger time. And yeah, on with the rest of the pod. So we're delighted to be joined by Mike Cooper from our elder sister podcast, The Rolling Mall. Thank you so much, Mike, for joining me. And unfortunately, Jess can't make it because she's conducting coaching at Huddersfield Rugby Club at the moment. But thank you so much for joining us. I've just been listening to your guys' latest episode of the podcast today. As a massive Star Wars fan, I love that title. You rebel scrum. That's great.
I had to move on the title because we had Nick Mullins on it. I had to move him from being the first name on it in case he thought I was sort of insinuating that he was rebel scum. And I wasn't sure if he was a Star Wars fan or not. We've talked about a lot. We've talked about spaghetti bolognese in Leicester City with him, but we haven't talked about his Star Wars preferences. So, no, exactly. I used to think put a lot of hard work into the titles. I've given up on it now. It's just kind of whatever tickles my fancy after 2 hours of recording.
Yeah, no, I definitely have a similar thing. I think my favourite thus far was Double Headed Tool and Trouble, which was the Macbeth reference when I was talking about doing Macbeth, and it was the Gloucester Slater Cup doubleheader that we were reviewing. That was
a good episode. I like that, very sort of highbrow as well, much more highbrow than we are.
Yeah, no, but it's been really, really good. But obviously, we're sister podcasts and stuff, so I just thought I'd have you on just to talk about, you know, how you think the women's team have been getting on this season. I mean, obviously, it has been a step up from the Championship. I mean, obviously, last year, you and Elliot were doing a lot in the news section. You got some really good interviews of some of the players last year as well. I just wondered, like, I know obviously you talked a little bit, you and Elliot talked a little bit about it in the latest episode, but kind of what are your thoughts on the women overall this season?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me on, because I do listen every week, except one. I think there was one, I think it was might have been the Exeter game when it was a bit like the men's result. I don't think it was a very good result. I'm in a good mood. I don't want to put it down. But you guys have done such a fantastic job getting the podcast off the ground, and obviously you've got a great relationship with the club as well. Getting interviews with players, so it's great. And I certainly don't feel like the father of the podcast, because I think I just pointed you in the direction of Jess, but I feel like more sort of that negligent dad that maybe sort of shows up sort of, you know, kind of when the kid's 6 years old and sort of hands a birthday present and that's it. But no, you guys have done such a phenomenal job, and you know, it's a great listen. So firstly, well done on that.
Cheers. Thank
secondly,
you.
on the women's front, it's I don't know. Sometimes we feel like we repeat ourselves quite a bit when we try and review it, because there's obviously a passion from our side to try and sort of like review games, even though some of them are still, you know, quite hard to find like full copies of, because, you know, I think there's only been one or two televised games in the season, which I've managed to watch. So it's challenging in that respect. But there was always going to be a big unknown going into this season, wasn't it? You know, when you're putting, you know, nigh on a ton on every opposition last season, it's clear that the squad that we had was far, far, far too good for that level. But then what we don't know is, we know in the men's game, for example, that, you know, some players from the Championship can make the step up and become very effective Premiership players and even go on to become internationals. We know that. We've seen it happen. With the second tier of the women's game, that gulf is quite an unknown. And, you know, we knew, obviously, the senior management knew, Vicky McQueen knew, that there was going to need to be some serious recruitment to make us competitive. And, you know, there was, you know, good investment from the club to bring in, you know, lots of players. But obviously, whilst there were some headline names, Meg Jones, obviously, is an absolute superstar. Could watch her all day. Amy Kincaid, I'm sure, will be an absolute legend. She's probably the standout marquee signing for us, but obviously because of injury, we haven't seen it yet. But, you know, a lot of the rest of them, whilst there's a huge amount of talent there, were, you know, some of them were sort of, you know, squad players from other teams, and you brought them in from all sorts different teams and trying to get them to gel whilst also getting the existing squad members, you know, with whom, you know, there's a lot of talent there. Obviously, Natasha Jones, you know, is, yeah, Captain Fantastic. I think she's yeah. wonderful. And there's plenty of other names. Obviously, Fuzz in the front row is his personal hero of mine, and I'm sure of Jess's as well. And, you know, those guys also have to take not only time to make the step up and become accustomed to that level, but they've also got to all of a sudden gel with players from about, you know, 10 different teams who have suddenly come in, and you're being asked to join a team and make a step up to another level. I think only, to be honest, after a few games, I started to kind of realise that perhaps any expectations I had that we might sort of, you know, perhaps get a few wins, maybe finish in a sort of solid lower mid-table position was probably entirely unrealistic. And I think where Elliot and I always try to sort of say is that this was always going to be a challenging, this was always going to be sort of the baseline from which we build going forward. And, you know, what we have seen is there are flashes of real quality that we're showing on a regular basis. It's just about trying to find, you know, that that mythical beast, the 80-minute performance.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And it is something that me and Jess have been talking quite a lot as well. I think what's quite interesting and what you can compare with both the men's team and the women's team this season is that, yeah, obviously we had to like bring, like recruit a lot of people in to so that we could sort of close that gap between the Championship One North and the PWR. But also a lot of those players then went off to WXV. So it's kind of similar to the men's team and having a lot of that squad away for the World Cup. And then the...
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then everyone sort of coming back in and gelling, having to like gel quite quickly and then adjust to a new league and all those kind of things. So, yeah, I mean, I think, to be honest, I think me and Jess were similar because when we first started talking, before we started getting the ball rolling, we were kind of thinking like, oh yeah, maybe sort of like eighth, ninth, few wins here, few smash and grabs. And, you know, we've been close on a couple occasions. I think, it, like you said, it is quite frustrating. I think the only game that was televised, that we've had televised, the women's game, was against Loughborough Lightning. We haven't had a game televised since, although the game this weekend against Bristol is being televised on TNT. And they don't publish full match highlights of any other game that isn't televised. So it is frustrating. And that sometimes has been a bit of a struggle, specifically with away games, in terms of trying to review it, because we're reliant on match reports. We're reliant on the not just the club's feed, but then the social media feed of the other club as well. So that's what we've been doing quite a lot. But no, Saturday was a really good opportunity to see the women for the first time, from my perspective, in sort of in the flesh and for a full 80. And there's definitely a lot there. Like as you said, we are scoring a lot of tries. I mean, yeah, Meg Jones is a superstar, and me and Jess are really glad that. We didn't come up with the nickname Magic Meg on our own. It was the comment of a listener responding to a, I think it was from the first Exeter game. And I think I can't remember the name, so I do apologise if you're listening now, but I definitely remember they said that it was a magic moment from Meg, and that's what made us come up with the nickname Magic Meg, which is what the club seemed to...
You didn't go for Mystic Meg?
No.
It was right there. But Magic Meg, to be fair, is absolutely appropriate. I think she's genius. And, you know, she's the complete package, you know, for what you want in that midfield, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. And she's done really well. She started off at 13. She's been playing 12 a lot more. And yeah, me and Jess have been talking about how her relationship with Captain Stash, which is her nickname at Fly Half, and obviously our captain of the women's side is really starting to gel and work some wonders for us. But yeah, no, we've been having a lot of fun trying to come up with nicknames for other players. I mean, we were talking before we press record about Fran McGee, and I'm trying to push Fran McGee Whiz because of how quick she is and how some of the scores she was. She's been putting in for Tigers have been amazing. I mean, obviously, her try from the game against Quins has been nominated for Try of the Week, but throughout the entirety of Quins' game, and again, this is the frustration with not having full highlights and not having full match replay, that this can't be shown, but she was she was looking really dangerous and was breaking tackles and making runs sort of left, right and centre. So we've got a real superstar there. And finally back to sort of Amy Kincaid. Yeah, that's going to be massive for us when she comes back. But to be fair to Ellis Martin, who we interviewed a couple of weeks ago, and she was an absolutely fantastic interviewee. You know, Scottish international, used to play for Darlington, Mowdown Sharks before signing for us. She has been fantastic. And our set piece and our line out is really starting to click. So it's going to be really, really interesting when Amy Kincaid does come back. I mean, obviously, yeah, like you said, she's world class and she scored a hat trick in a World Cup final. So that's going to bring like bags and bags of quality and experience to us, especially in that scrum department as well, where we have been struggling still a little bit. But yeah, no, it has been really, really good. And obviously I really, really appreciate the feedback and yeah, it'd be cool to do more stuff forward. I mean, I don't know about double headers going forward because obviously we've got this big break coming with the men's game and the Gallagher Premiership. But yeah, I thought the double header itself went well on Saturday, but I don't know what your thoughts on that. Could you think that potentially that it could have been like pro mode slightly better or maybe even more specifically, like what are your thoughts on double headers for club games? Because they can be a controversial subject sometimes when it comes to growing women's rugby.
Well, I think that the international side, the English side, probably got it about right. I think they serve a purpose when you're sort of getting something established and getting it on its feet. But the timing of when you kind of say, right, this can go it alone now is pretty important. Maybe I think England maybe were a season or two too late in kind of, you know, giving the women their own platform as opposed to sort of piggybacking off the men's. And I think they perhaps didn't realise what a fantastic product they had and how many superstars they had. But, you know, I'm not going to blame people for because they're trading. They would, you know, England, for as much as I bag the RFU, and you will know I do that a lot, the one thing that I think they have done pretty well is support the women's game. And that's shown by the strength, I think, of the international side and the fact that we do have, you know, probably the world leading league, domestic league, in terms of the women's game. So, but they were treading new water, you know, they were at the forefront of being able to sort of establish the game and be able to promote it. So I think that the piggybacking sort of serves a purpose up until a point.
Yeah.
But it's always going to be difficult when you've got effectively you've still got a main event, which let's be honest, it is at the moment, where you've got the men's game and then you've got the women's game there. Now, the question is obviously when you've got a 3 o'clock kickoff, is it better to have the women's game before or after? I expect there's things about, you know, kind of like damage to the pitch that, you know, which that sounds pretty disrespectful because then the women still have to play on it afterwards. But I think it's always difficult. I was a little disappointed with the turnout, the amount that sort of stayed on. But it's difficult when you've got public transport and you've got a 3 o'clock kickoff and you're going into a Saturday evening. I think it's easier if you've got, you know, a Saturday lunchtime kickoff. And then you can sort of like, you know, there's less of a sort of a rush for people to say, well, look, I'd love to stay, but it's 5:30. I've got to get the kids home, blah, blah, blah. You know, if it's a daytime thing, you know, you can go and have an early lunch or a brunch. You go and watch the men's game, go off, have a snack, have a drink, and then come back and watch the women's game, and you can still be sort of back home in time for tea. And I think that, you know, there's going to be a lot of trial and error. There's certain things I think the club, you know, I thought the promo of it perhaps could have been a bit more in our face, you know, like really sort of like hammered in. It was quite... It was sort of like, oh, by the way, stick around for the women's game. It wasn't quite as full on as I would like, but again, similar to the RFU, you've got less, you know, the club here are still treading themselves their own new water. We can, you know, we can have our discussions about whether or not it should be new water. It should have been something that was done, you know, a long time ago, perhaps. But the fact of the matter is this where he is, and it is going to be a bit of trial and error, I think, with it for them. So, you know, I thought it went well, but, you know, it could be better, and I'm sure next time it will be as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, yeah, I definitely think that maybe having the women's game first as a lunchtime kickoff is probably the way forward. You know, obviously that requires coordination between the club, between PWR, between the Gallagher Premiership or whoever sort of the men's team are playing.
The big one is TNT, I think, because obviously, if, you know, we can say, yes, we've got a weekend, you know, where they're both playing at home, you know, spot on, let's do it. But if if TNT say, well, we want that on a Sunday or we want this on a Friday night, then you're scuppered. And if actually we said, well, let's put the men on the lunchtime kickoff and the women afterwards, which, you know, maybe the best sort of both worlds, then all of a sudden, you know, you're asking perhaps TNT to say, well, actually, we don't get particularly great viewing figures around Saturday lunchtime. We get better on Saturday afternoon. So sorry, unlucky. And it's a difficult one because they're still, you know, going to be the major financiers of the men's game. So you kind of have to dance to their tune a bit. But obviously, they're still promoting the women's game. So you'd hope there'd be some sort of opportunity for TNT Sports there. So there's probably discussions to be had well above sort of like our brainwave capacity that would be between the club and not just the Premiership Rugby and PWR, but also with TNT.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of factors, and obviously, like you said, we're new to this, and as a club, and obviously I'm sure we can do at some point get into the nitty gritty of, you know, should we be at this point, or should this all happen sort of 5 or 6 years ago or even longer. But yeah, I think you're definitely right. It is unfortunately very reliant on TNT. But you know, as I said, and as we said across the podcast, that you know, the game against Bristol Bears women is on TNT Sports this weekend. So obviously that could be a good opportunity. And yeah, hopefully as the season goes, I mean, the attendance was probably a little bit disappointing, but it was still higher than the Loughborough Lightning game. And it will slowly creep up. And I think especially once Tigers get that victory, and if Tigers do get that victory this weekend against Bristol Bears women, obviously that's on TV as well. That means that Premiership Women's Rugby will post the full match on their YouTube, so people can look at it, and then, you know, more people will be interested. So there'll be a domino effect, I think, of once that gets over the line as well. But anyway, I won't keep you too long, mate, because I appreciate you've given a little bit of your Tuesday evening, and, you know, with looking after the kids and whatnot. So thank you so much for joining us for a little snippet. I can't wait to talk more about Star Wars rugby and slagging off the RFU, because I will also jump at the opportunity to do that. But cheers, mate. Class one. Thank you.
That's right. My request to interview Bill Sweeney have so far been ignored, but I'll keep you posted. Thank you very much. Keep up the great work, you and Jess, and hopefully have you on our pod soon as well.
Awesome.
I am shuffling papers. I am sitting at a desk. Here we go. I will bring you the news, because there's quite a bit of news to chat about. So let's do PWR results first, as is tradition. So here are the rest of the results. Sail Sharks 3, Saracens 69, Gloucester Hartbury 42, Loughborough Lightning 24, and Exeter Chiefs 38, Trailfinders 19. And by all accounts, that Chiefs Trailfinders game was quite exciting as well, which is really, really pleasing that we're, you know, everybody is showing exciting kind of brands of rugby this year. I also did a little bit of digging on PWR stats so far this season. So as we're talking about Magic Meg is one of the top point scorers across the league. I think there's about 10 in the league table, and she, I think Sophie DeGood is top, unsurprisingly. Yeah. But Magic Meg is in that table of top point scorers, which is really, really cool. Saracens are at the top of a stats table in terms of least points conceded at home and away. So that speaks volumes for their defence. Trailfinders have the highest points scored for home fixtures, which is impressive and kind of, again, speaks volumes about Trailfinders' attack and brand of rugby that they're wanting to play this season. And Saracens have the highest points scored for away fixtures. And we talk about this league being like really exciting. We talk about women's rugby giving you more bang for your buck because the ball in play time is higher. There's been an immense amount of points scored so far this season. So across the season so far, there's been 1,392 points scored, which is quite a large amount. And again, you get more bang for your buck because there's an average of 8.46 tries per game, which is a large amount of tries to see. And there's an average of 53.54 points scored per game. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Jacob, but for me, it speaks volumes that when you go and see a PWR game, whoever it is you're going to see an exciting style of attacking rugby, and you're going to see lots of tries, which when you're going to see a game of rugby, you do want to see lots of tries. That's why we go and see it. So it says that this is a really exciting league that offers viewers a lot of value for money. You'll get a lot of rugby for your pounds that you've spent.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Chiefs Trailfinders game from the weekend, that was on TNT Sports. I can't remember the exact player, but there was an insane try from, I think, one of the Trailfinders players. So it wasn't Abby Dow, it was the other Trailfinders wing. And she scored this just absolutely amazing solo try that really blew up on social media. And again, that is because of that TNT coverage, that TNT posts that, and then that gets retweeted, and then sort of that gets shared in sort of the main rugby sort of fan base on social media, and that's really helping to build the profile of the league. So, Chiefs fans are watching that, or Trailfinders fans are watching that and thinking, oh, I'm going to go to that next game. And then just general rugby viewers are seeing that and thinking that, oh, that game looks really good. I know there's the Champions Cup this season, but there's Tigers playing Bristol at 1 o'clock on Saturday. I might give that a go before then I watch the game that kicks off at 3:15, 3 o'clock in the Champions Cup. So, we are seeing a really good attacking style of rugby that's being put on show by PWR, and because of that, because of TNT Sports showing one game per weekend, obviously we would like for it to be more. Chiefs have had a lot of games this season. Obviously, we've got our second game this season, so hopefully we're going to get a few more as the PWR season progresses. So, there's always room for improvement. Access to streams, I think, is still quite tough, and all that kind of thing. But there is exciting rugby on show, which again makes me frustrated that the highlights of the whole weekend were a bit not at their best. And it's kind of, obviously, for the Saracens Tigers game, Saracens were able to publish like a full 8 minute video. So clearly they had access to that footage and they had the permission to share that. This is kind of a little bit of a plea for Tigers to be doing that as well, because as great as the Magic Meg and the Fran McGee Whiz scores were, Tigers fans are going to be really, really excited by that Ellis Martin and that Talia Brodie Rolling Maul scores as well. And obviously, then that also gives Quinn's fans a chance to see their tries as well. So, a lot, still plenty of improvement to be made. But I think what is very clear is that, yes, this league is very, very exciting. There's plenty of really, really good rugby, not just end-to-end tries, but, still physical defence, still great scrums, great mauls, kick battles, all the great elements of our sport that we love is on show, and it's very, very high quality. And yeah, we're loving talking and celebrating about it. Let's get more love and celebration from the clubs, from the league, from TNT, and this sport will only continue to grow.
Yeah, massively. And speaking about, I think now the power of community and the power of women's rugby as a community. On to the next kind of news item, which we are going to post a couple of Just Giving pages and links up on our Twitter as we're recording this, and we'll keep posting them up as well. The first one comes from England and Quinns player Vicky Cornborough. She is braving the shave in order to raise money and show support for her sister, who I think was an England Pathway player. So is also a rugby player. Her sister sadly was diagnosed with cancer, and in early December, Vicky's sister Sam had to stop breastfeeding her son in order to have a mastectomy and to begin chemotherapy. Vicky posted on Instagram that braving the shave is an opportunity for them both to take back some control and turn it into a positive by donating their hair to the Little Princess Trust to be made into children's wigs. There is a Just Giving page that people can share and donate if they're able. All money raised will go to Rugby Against Cancer, the Little Princess Trust, and Macmillan Cancer Support. So if you are able to donate, please do so on that Just Giving page, or if you're not able to donate, please just share and get the word out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you are a woman, this is a reminder. You know, if you have breast tissue, this is a reminder to keep checking yourself. Even if you do it once a month and you mark it on the calendar as today is the day I check, or you get your partner to help you check and it's something that you do together, please do check yourself. And if you find a lump, please go and speak to your GP. And I think, you know, I speak for us both when, and maybe the whole of the Tigers and rugby community, when we're sending our thoughts and our love to Vicky Cornbrenner, her sister Sam, and everyone in that family, and everyone who has been affected by breast cancer.
100%.
So moving on to, I think we spoke about it earlier. We're going to chat about PWR, international players and England qualified players, because it was in the news in the women's sports section of the Telegraph last week. They did an interview with Susie Appleby, who's the head coach down at Exeter Chiefs. Susie Appleby has voiced frustrations at current rules because they had to do quite some chopping and changing of their squad for the weekend's fixture when they played Trailfinders to meet the England player qualified player quota. So all teams in the PWR must have a minimum average of 13 players in a match day squad across the season. So it's a season average. And according to the Telegraph, Sale have also struggled to kind of meet that requirement. And potentially they've got a 5-point deduction coming their way, which I think they're going to accept that deduction. I think it was mentioned by one of the Sale Sharks owners in a podcast, but I saw about it on Twitter, so that's a not verifiable source, but I think they're going to accept the point deduction. Susie Appleby, however, at Quinns, she did a kind of heavy squad rotation in the Telegraph. She, as I said, she did voice some frustrations. She said that it does it raise player safety questions around, do you put the wrong player in on the pitch at the wrong time? Could that lead to injury? Yes, player safety is paramount, player welfare is paramount, you know, but I think if you know there's a season-long average, you probably have to factor that into account in the overall development of your main squad and your squad environment. But I can't say, because I'm not coaching at a PWR level and I'm not in Susie Appleby's shoes, and I don't know what her overall squad looks like and what the training environment is like and what level players are at. It's a really tricky one. For me, to give some context, the men's quota, I think, is due to rise this year in August to each matchday squad having 15 England qualified players. PWR currently has an average of 13, although I also think the Telegraph mentioned that Sale have been chatting to Belinda Moore, who's the head of PWR, about this rule. So there's ongoing conversations about this stuff, but these are the current rules that every squad has to play with. And it's, is it right? Is it wrong? Is that the right number? I don't know, because it's tricky, because we want to say that this is the best domestic women's league in the world. And therefore, as we know, because Tigers have got a wide variety of international players, it attracts talent from different countries. But we also want to keep the Red Roses at the top of the game, and absolutely developing English talent is paramount. So what is the balance? And that, I literally just wrote that on my notes. What is the balance in question mark? Because I honestly don't know. I don't know what the balance is. 13 is lower than what the men's prem is going to be. Mm. So there's a more demand on the men's premiership, who obviously have got longer academy systems being in place, a longer history of developing English qualified players. So it's absolutely right that it's not a copy and paste like for both leagues, because but each league is in a different position with regards to developing English talent. So I think it's right that the men are more, and it's pleasing that the men are going to be more, and we don't have this copy and paste stuff. Well, the men's game have been doing like this, therefore the women's game must do the same, which frustrates me. It's got to be what suits each game, each league. So I don't know, but I definitely do think there's a, you do need to have a rule on how many England qualified players you need to have. There does need to be a quota because we want to ensure that the Red Roses continue to be at the top of the game, and we want to ensure that development is going into your club's local area to help the development of women and girls playing, whether that's an academy or a college link or a school link. And I'm casting our mind back to the pod episode we did on pathways. We want to ensure that money is funneled into pathways to mean that even a greater number of women and girls have access to rugby and have access to go and play at the highest level or the level that is suitable for them. So that absolutely for me is paramount. But I agree, a balance, because we also want to still make sure that this is one of the best domestic leagues in the world. And we want to attract talent, specifically also because some of the players that will come to us won't have good domestic leagues in their country. So by us having the PWR, it means that those players get a higher quality of game time, and it just improves the standard of women's rugby at the top levels overall. If you've got the likes of Talia Brodie, who's an American player, playing in the PWR, that's going to elevate her rugby standard and means that when she goes and plays for her country, if she gets the opportunity to do so, it's going to elevate world rugby and women's international teams overall. So there's definitely has to be a balance. But I don't know what that balance, I don't know what that number is, but I'm pleased that it's not the same as the men's. It shouldn't just be a copy and paste because both leagues are in different situations with regards to player development.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's going to take time to get that balance right. So, I can understand the sort of Exeter's and Sale's frustration, but I think it is going to be a case of like waiting to see kind of what is the best option in the long term. I think looking, yeah, I completely agree. We can't just copy and paste what the men game do, but I think if we got a balance that reflected the balance that there is in the French men's game. So obviously the top 14 is probably, I would argue, this might be a bit controversial, I would argue that's probably the best league in the world, the French top 14. And obviously we've seen in recent years how well they've done to sort of fix the imbalances that they've had in that league to ensure they've got French qualified players in quotas. And we've seen how much more consistent the French team is and how good they are, consistently top three in the world. First Grand Slam in 2022, since 2010, and we're a missed conversion away from getting to the semi-final of a World Cup, and played the best game that I've ever seen of rugby played, which was that Springbok Le Bleu quarterfinal in the Men's World Cup. So, the it is possible to get that balance, I think, of having quality international players that add to the quality of the league, that allow the league to bring big games in, to bring big names in, sorry, that people will want to come and see. But then also we've got the systems in place so that a girl comes through the academy and the centres of excellence and the clubs and English RFU pathways, and we've allowed them to turn into our own sort of superstar and have our own superstars. But also we want to be doing that for the likes of the players coming in from outside of England as well. Like obviously, again, I'm talking about Fran McGee, but she is a superstar in the making, and she's doing that because she's playing in the PWR and then is able to do that for Scotland. So, we've got to make sure that the PWR is bringing in superstars, but is making superstars for the English game, but then also other rugby nations as well. So that's all I've got to say on it. I just think, unfortunately, it might take a while for the PWR to get it right. So we're gonna probably have to be a bit patient in that area and keep scrutiny on PWR to ensure that balance does get it right.
Yeah, agree. And I think wouldn't it be a nice world where we were able to have the likes of like Ruby Tui alongside English qualified players in the PWR? And wouldn't that be amazing? So there's definitely a balance to be struck, and I think we can only it's just going to learn and get better over time with the stats that we see in the women's game evolving, aided by WXV. More international women's teams are going to get regular game time. All of that stuff will affect how we perceive international players coming into the PWR. There's two final news points to come up, and one's a bit of a question. I want to talk about referees, and it's a bit of a question, and it might be something that I'm going to research and ask in the next couple of weeks. So kind of you'll have to bear with me for an update, but I will give you an update on this when I know more. It was a question I asked, I think, on Saturday at the game. We know that men's prem benefits from having referees visiting and chatting to clubs about what they're looking for. I'm assuming PWR teams have the same. They should. But how often are these visits? The referees are different, as men's prem is seen as the top tier for referees in this country. So how easy are PWR clubs finding the access to referees to help them improve their game? If you know how often PWR teams have visits from referees, please do let me know. Get in touch, because this is going to be something I'm going to return to maybe in the next couple of weeks, but I'm on a bit of a fact-finding mission. But if you have some facts, please do let me know, and I shall add it onto the update. The last news item is another Just Giving page. So if you're able to donate, please do give some money. If you're able to share, please share and get the word out, because I know Leicester Tigers' social media has already shared it. This is another kind of plea we're sending out with regards to Nottingham Rugby Club. Nottingham sadly have been hit really badly by flooding at their Lady Bay site, which I think is actually, I've coached that before for girls rugby club, so I've been there. Due to it being on a floodplain, the insurance available to the club will not cover the costs incurred of the flooding, so they're putting up a Just Giving page. Obviously, Nottingham has great links with Tigers, with some pre-season fixtures, loaning of players, development of players. They're just generally doing good stuff for rugby, and we should really help them out if we're able to, because we need, you know, a lot of clubs playing and contributing and making this rugby in this country great. So if you can help Nottingham, please, please, please do so.
Yeah, please do.
Earlier this week, I sat down with prop Churchy Knight. We spoke about her favourite player, Dan Cole. Surprise, surprise, we had a lot in common there. And we also spoke about the Embrace the Chaos Tigers culture that's happening behind the scenes. Hey, Churchy. Thank you for meeting with me. I just want to kick off and sort of ask the initial question of, you've been with Leicester Tigers women's team, I think, since the beginning. So what's the experience been like? Because you've seen the team grow and evolve and improve. What's that been like?
It's been amazing, really. I think from the start, there's always been like a really good energy at Tigers, like with all the girls, like supporting each other, being there for one another, hyping each other up kind of thing. And I think that's something we really value. And like I say, like that energy's been there from the start. So it's been really like nice to see that grow, even entering the Prem, like when the pressure comes on, it's really nice to not lose that like wholesome vibe we've got going on and actually like see it grow instead of lose it when the pressure comes on. So yeah, it's been a really good journey to be a part of kind of thing.
Awesome. And I love that you keep your togetherness even when the pressure's on. Obviously, and we've spoken about it on the pod, that women and girls will encounter rugby at different points in their life. Like some will encounter it early on and some will encounter it later on. So when did you first start playing rugby? What's your rugby journey been like?
So I started probably like first year under 15s. I started for my local club, Chesterfield, and we kind of partnered with Ashfield at the time, because like you say, for I think with women's rugby the main issue is actually finding a club in the first place to join. So I started off there. We had to join together because of numbers kind of thing, so did that for all the way up until under 18s. Then when it hit under 18s and I started wanting a bit more game time, playing maybe my position a bit more, I then moved to Mansfield because I think they were probably one of the bigger teams in our league kind of thing. And that's when, yeah, I started like actually like managing to settle into a position kind of thing.
Awesome. And then obviously we mentioned it's the team's first PWR season and there's been loads of learning and improvements. So what's that learning been like behind the scenes? What kind of stuff have you been focusing on both individually and as a team?
I think like our motto this year has been embrace the chaos. So like not everything's gonna go right, and like we all signed up to that at the start kind of thing, like the coaches, the players. It's just being able to adapt like to new things, because there's always gonna be random things that get thrown at you. Something's gonna go wrong, like, but it's being able to think on the spot and just think, actually, it's no biggie. We'll just tackle it a different way, kind of thing. Like, look at it from a different perspective. And I think that's what we've all done this year. And I think that probably links in with the energy I was talking about before. Like, when something goes wrong, not getting really aggy and really annoyed, actually, like, sticking together and being like, oh, well, like, let's just embrace this chaos and move forward.
I love that. It sounds like a really special team culture to have. What's been your favorite memory of playing for Tigers so far? Has it been like a standout moment that you kind of think back on and kind of instantly smile?
I think my first Prem game against Hartbury was probably my most standout memory. So I'm not one to usually get nervous before games, but like before going on that pitch, like I could feel myself, like the energy, adrenaline starting to build, and then coming on. And because I was quite worried that, because this is my first year in the Prem as a player, so feeling that pressure and that adrenaline, and like, I was quite worried that, oh, am I going to be good enough? Am I going to be strong enough, kind of thing? Like, what, am I going to be able to still tackle people in the Prem, kind of thing? And then when I got on the pitch, I was like, oh, this actually all right. I can handle myself and I can play. So I think that little spark of confidence kind of thing is probably the thing that stands out to me most, just because I was so nervous for that game. And then when I got on the pitch, I just loved it. So yeah, it was probably one of my most standout moments so far.
No, I love that. And are we going to talk about props and scrummaging just for one question? I limited myself to only one. I saw on Tiger's website that one of your favorite Tigers players is Dan Cole. Same. What's it been like learning from other props? Obviously, Leah Bartlett is in the Tigers women's squad. So what's it been like learning off her and other props?
It's been amazing, genuinely. Like, they're always willing to help. If I ever have a question, like even my hookers, like Ellis, has been so good to learn from. Like, I'm constantly, because I think I'm probably one of the younger ones on the team, only being 21. So I feel like I'm like always like so eager to keep learning from people. So I'm always asking the questions, and they're always so keen to help me out, and use their like experience to help me. So yeah, it's been really positive. And like I said, I've got a long way to go. So I'm always asking those questions, but they never get annoyed with me, kind of thing. Sometimes I feel like I'm asking too much, but no, they're always genuinely so like wholesome about it, and like always willing to sit with me before training and go th through things, or even in the middle of training, just explain something to me. So yeah, having that experience to learn from has been really helpful this season.
I love that, and I think the fact that obviously everybody's willing to sit down and you feel comfortable to ask so many questions, I think just goes back to that really, really special team environment that you've highlighted, which I love. My last question, kind of looking forward to Bristol at the weekend. What are you most excited about welcoming them to Matty Earlywood's Welford Road?
I think the physicality of the game is going to be something I'm looking forward to, because I think that's the thing that draws me to rugby, is the physicality. Like, I love a chop tackle. I love getting involved in all the breakdowns and stuff. So I think I'm very much driven by like being pushed, kind of thing. So coming up against teams that are really physical, like I get excited about that, because I'm like, right, this is a chance to really like partly prove myself and actually have a good time and like really get stuck in and like show what I can do on the pitch, kind of thing. So yeah, I think that's something like I'm quite excited about.
So, following on from that beautiful, beautiful motoring rolling maul that led to Talia Brodie getting that score, we are focusing on her as our player profile for this week. So, I've got some stats to run through with you. So, she plays in the back row. She's played for New York Rugby, Getxo, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right, Getxo Rugby in Spain, Coco Drillers Rugby, Berkeley All Blues, and Cheltenham Tigers. She's also played in the 2019 Farah Palmer Cup for Bay of Plenty Volcanics, and she's also played in the Farah Palmer Cup for Tasman Macos. If you don't know, The Farah Palmer Cup is one of the highest levels of domestic women's rugby union competition in New Zealand. She's got one cap so far for the USA in 2023 when they went on a tour to play Spain. I think it was like a two-game tour, a three-game tour. So she's got one USA cap so far. And when she played for Tasman Mako, they named her the team's Defender of the Year when she played for them. So she's obviously one to look out for as being immense in defence, which rhymes and makes me extremely happy, as well as just her attacking skills to score off a maul. Jacob, she was really, really impressive at the game. What are your thoughts on Brody? Because she's played kind of everywhere at really high standards. She's played in America. She's played in Spain. She's played for Cheltenham Tigers, who of course beat us at that final game. She's played for USA. She's played for the Farah Palmer Cup, which is obviously a really high standard of domestic competition in New Zealand. What's your thoughts? I'm really impressed by her playing CV, and she's played in amazing locations, and I'm not at all jealous of that.
Yeah, that is a pretty impressive CV in terms of, you know, areas of the world she's played in. You know, we see that it's quite interesting about the Farah Palmer Cup, New Zealand rugby. So the Farah Palmer Cup is kind of like the women's version of the NPC, which is like the competition that's played in New Zealand when they're not playing, when like the Super Rugby season's over. So it's quite interesting that both the men's and the women's version of that league seems to be quite a popular destination for American players. A lot of American players tend to like go there, play that half of the season, then go back to America and also play. So it's just quite interesting to see where she's played and stuff. And I think going back to her specifically, I thought she played really well against Quinns I thought she played really, really well against Quinns on the weekend. She controlled the ball at the back really well. As I say, she was putting in some really, really good hits. And now this is the consecutive game that she's played with KMA at blindside flank. There's a really, obviously her fellow American, I think there's a really, really good relationship in the back row that's developing between the two gals there. And obviously we've been talking about, especially in last week's pod, about potentially having that big ball carrier in our back five of the pack. If we stick with this KMA going at blindside going forward, I think that's something that's quite exciting, because sometimes it can work having the big number six and then having the number eight as well. And you know, she made an awesome carry. I can remember it. I think she picked off the base of the scrum and absolutely steamed through, got really over the game line, and obviously her work was rewarded with scoring a try as well. And what was quite impressing me was that off the base of the scrum, her link play with the backs was really good. When she, you know, when we had people running dummy lines, she was passing out the back. That was really cohesive as well. So she's a really, really good player. And yeah, obviously she was interviewed by LTTTV afterwards. I can always think, do I say too many T's whenever I say LTTV? No, no. LTTV.
LTTV.
Yeah, I always think I say too many T's. Anyway, ignoring that, she did a really good interview with Stan for the Leicester Tigers YouTube account. So I do recommend watching that as well. I think what's clear in that, she came across really well, and I think she's one of, I think she's a leader in that pack as well. She's played a lot for us this season. She's got through a lot of hard graft, and yeah, she's definitely a workhorse, and she was really, really good at the weekend. So yeah, another really good player that we're blessed to have in our ranks.
Yeah, and I just wanted to pick up what you said about the YouTube channel, because Tigers do have that YouTube channel. It is really good. They've got classic matches on there. They've got interviews, so you can look back at all the introducing series with the Tigers women's player. They've also got, and I love watching these, they've also got those Tigers eyes, so sort of insights, background into the men's squad, in their week prep to help build excitement for the matches. It would be really, really, really cool to get Tiger's eyes for the women's team. So we can get insight into their training. We can get better insight into the personalities, how they prepare things. Now, obviously, I think that would help get people to the game. We were chatting about this, about what audiences can Tigers attract. All of this stuff, though, that the if, buts and maybes, oh, wouldn't it be great if we got the universities in, got the freshers in? Wouldn't it be great if we had Tiger's eyes for the women's team? It must be said that all of this stuff requires extra funding and person power. So Stan, who works for Leicester Tigers, would have to go and record all the Tiger's eyes, or it would require a videographer to record the Tiger's eyes stuff for the women's team. That obviously needs to have a budget, getting better links with the university to get freshers in, to get women's teams in, to watch the games, to advertise that stuff. Those links, that obviously requires a budget. And we know the Tigers women's team do currently operate on a small budget. You know, if you buy a Leicester Tigers season ticket and you get that women's season ticket added on, if you did that at the start of the season, that 100% of that money that you go for the women's season ticket goes to the women's team. That's how the majority of it is funded. Obviously, they've got sponsors and stuff. So what we can do as fans is, if we're wanting this content, if we're wanting to engage with this content, or we're wanting different ways of packing out Matty Ollywood's Welford Road, if we're wanting university links or different content to engage with, I think we also have to put our money where our mouth is, and try and support this women's team as much as we can. And some of that does mean contributing financially if you're able. So even if you're unable to attend the women's games, if you are fortunate enough to be able to afford the women's add-on season ticket at the start of the season, you're paying that with the full knowledge that 100% of those funds go to the women's team. And I think that would help massively, because I think it was commented before, maybe I commented on it, I don't know. Somebody said that they would like women's Tiger's eyes, and I was just reminded of that, and I would really, really like that too. But I think we have to also be aware that all of that incurs a cost. And it's probably a cost that Tigers are going, oh, wouldn't it be great if we had the Tigers eyes for the women's team? Sadly, our budget doesn't enable us to do it, because we're paying for the coaches and the kit and all of that background stuff that goes unseen. So I think the more that we can get behind this women's team, the more content we'll see, simply because the budget might be a little larger.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been very vocal about that. I do want Tiger's eyes for the women's team as well, but I obviously completely understand the reasons why that isn't the case. And also, I've got to remember that it's only been this season that the men have had their own sort of behind the scenes footage, so getting the camera equipment, having the personnel, having the whether the person that's filming it is editing it, or whether they're having a different person editing it as well. So there's all these practicalities going through.
And I also think it takes time for somebody to review it, to make sure you're not giving away too much information to, you know, if you're playing Saracens and it's the Saracens preview of Tiger's Eyes, you don't want to give away too much information that's going to kind of show your hand. So it has to have a Tigers personnel reviewing it to go, yes, we're happy for this to go out, we're not happy for that to go out. So all of that takes time. I think it would be something that would be really exciting for us to have next season, in future seasons, to have the women's Tiger's eyes. But we're wanting this stuff I think we have to come out with the knowledge that all of this incurs a cost. So if you're able to support in any way, please, please do, because, you know, we'll improve the budget and we'll undoubtedly get more content from it.
Yeah, absolutely. I do wonder, though, if, because it was the double header, could we see even like it's a 2 minute snippet from the men's Tiger's eyes? We'll wait and see, because the Tiger's eyes won't be released till the end of this week. But that is definitely something to think about. But, you know, as part of our podcast, as part of these player profiles, we're trying to build with the listeners and trying to get in with the general fan base of you to get to know these players. And, you know, with the interview with Church Unite as well, we're trying to build the profile of these female players with the fans as well. And I think, you know, going back to the double header as well, you know, there were people there, there were families there, you know, there were fans who probably haven't seen, were also seeing the women for the first time. And, you know, yes, it is disappointing that we haven't quite clicked yet in terms of getting in terms of getting wins on the board, but we were so close. And I think a lot of people would have left Matty Edwards Welford Road after the women's game on Saturday night feeling quite proud of seeing a Tigers performance from our girls. So, you know, that will only continue to grow. And again, I plead to the club during the Men's Six Nations, when our fixture calendar is very light, do market the hell out of these women's games and make sure that we can get like really good money just going into the general coffers of the club when we've not got fixtures on during the Men's Six Nation period. But back to Talia herself, I think another thing that's quite interesting to note is that, yes, obviously we'll talk about that she was playing for Cheltenham Tigers last year. The reason that we signed her basically was for that 30-meter try that she scored for Cheltenham in the final that helped Cheltenham get their shock victory over us in the Championship One North final at Twickenham last year. So I'm sure she got a bit of grief for that when she first came into the club. But you know, again, hats off to her. She's really embedded herself really well into the team. She's been playing in a lot of games. I think she was playing she wasn't playing in the cup because I believe she might have been with USA for WXV as part of their wider training squad. But she's definitely been with us. Even if I've got that wrong, she's definitely been with us for the majority of the season. And been playing in a lot of the games and stuff. And she's a fantastic player. Again, really well spoken. And yeah, do check out those. We're asking Tigers for more content, but you know, please do check out the introducing series. Check out the LTTV interviews of all the players. You know, they are really good, and the players do come well really across. We're going to do our bit. We're going to continue to do these player profiles. We're going to continue to hopefully get more in depth interviews with players and stuff. But yeah, that's a much shorter player profile than last week on Celia Quanzar. But yeah, another one of our American players, which again we talk about in terms of going forward with quotas. Could that change long term? I don't know, but I'm it's really good to see that at our club we've got that American contingent of Fury, Brody, and Sagapolo Sinele. You know, a really strong core as well, because they've played a lot for us. You know, Tess Fury scored a couple of tries, including that wonder try, let's not forget, against Gloucester Hartbury. You know, KMA has become a really crucial part of our pack, whether that's at tight head prop or whether that's blindside flanker going forward. She's playing that really key role. And yeah, Talia Brody is a very, very solid workhorse operator at the back of our scrum. So yeah, that brings to end our player profile for you guys, and on to the Bristol preview.
Yeah, exciting times, as we have another home game. So we're welcoming Bristol to Matty Ollywood's Welford Road. It will be on TNT. Which is amazing for us, because it gives us greater level of content to comb through afterwards, so that we can bring stuff to you in the pod. I'm just going to go give a little bit of an insight into what players are included in the Bristol squad. But actually, I think it's really important to say that when we're reviewing this game next week, we're going to... There's an opportunity to kind of review our progress overall as a squad, because the last time we played Bristol, it was in the Allianz Cup, which was mid-Octobery time, and it saw Bristol score 55 points and we only scored 3. I can already say with great confidence that scoreline will be narrower at the weekend, because we've made vast amount of improvements. And you know, although both teams have got their WXV players returning to us now, which they weren't in the Allianz Cup, because the WXV was on. I already know that scoreline's going to be narrower, and it gives us an opportunity, like a nice framing device to kind of review here's how we were in the cup. Now we've played some PWR league games. Actually, we can directly compare and contrast our improvements, which is going to be really, really exciting. So here's what players we can expect to see on the team sheet-ish when Bristol Bears come to us to Matthew Lee with Welford Road. So Bristol have in their squad the likes of Abby Ward, who's obviously wife of Dave Ward. They've got that coach-player captain relationship, and she's obviously just returned from having a baby, which is something we spoke about in a pod episode a couple of weeks ago. She's a formidable player. So alongside Abby Ward, there's Amber Reed, Claire Malloy, Hannah Botterman, Holly Aitchison, Jazz Joyce, the electric Jazz Joyce, who plays for Wales and has played for GB Sevens, Lark Atkin-Davis, Simi Pam, and the amazing Sarah Byrne, who's formidable, gets you go forward over your gain line. So if we're looking in terms of improvements or consistency, we have to try and shut Sarah Byrne down in the same way we targeted Cleal.
Yeah.
Absolutely have to. And a little bit of a shout out as well, because alongside those players in the Bristol Bears squad, there's also a player that I coached in Amsterdam last July when I went on the Penguins tour, when Penguins women's team played their first 15s game, because previously they played sevens. So I do want to shout out and a best wishes to Molly Wilkinson, who I coach. So go well, Molly, but maybe not too well. But I'm hoping you're playing Molly, because Molly was an amazing player to coach. And is certainly a talent for now as well as a talent for the future. So yeah, shout out to Molly, because it was a joy to coach her. Like I said previously, this is an opportunity to compare with that Bristol fixture to see those improvements. Things I'd like to see. I made some kind of bullet points. The same defensive fronting up, that has to be massive. We have to take what we put in place against Cleal, and we have to do the same against Byrne and make no mistake. That's not only consistency, but that's a defensive stepping up too. Because imagine you've got Jasper Visa in the form of a prop. For those that aren't aware of Sarah Byrne's amazing storming possibilities to just storm through defences. I mean, she does it at an international level. She does it at PWR level. So targeting her in defence is going to be key. She will attempt to plow through us. So not only do I want consistency in the Cleal approach, but it's a step up, because Byrne is amazing. She's brilliant to watch. And she's also, I think, one of the most softly spoken players I've ever seen interviewed. And I had the joy of speaking to her when I took my women's team to Gloucester to see a couple of years ago to see England play Wales, because one of my players that I coach, her all-time favourite player is Sarah Byrne. So I managed to call Sarah over. We got a photo with Sarah Byrne, and she's lovely and she's softly spoken. But on the pitch, when the game is in play, she will run through you and demolish you like you're nothing. So she's impressive. So same defensive fronting up, or a stepping up in our defensive fronting up needed. I'd like to work on our push forward on the scrum put-in, but at the very least, I want to see us continue that sense of stability at the engaged time of being able to withstand pressure and put our own pressure on. So we're getting a good lean on, a good engage. Obviously, I want to see the continuation of the rolling wall as an attacking weapon. I would like to see more crossfield kicks from Meg. And a side note, because we got asked this a lot at the start of the season, why is Tash Jones at 10? Why is Meg not there? And I said, we've kind of got to trust in that combo, because it will be exciting. You've just got to see more games and see it come to life. We're seeing how her and Stash are linking together. And I think we can see it that you mentioned in that Fran McGee score, because a pass came out the back of the scrum. Lovely, lovely passes across the pitch to Meg, who saw the crossfield kick in. Having Stash and Meg playing in those combos together, that's providing those opportunities. So I'm loving how having Meg is enabling Stash to play, and probably having Stash is enabling Meg to play, and how they're different but working together. And I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I loved seeing Stash be a bit more upfront. And I think having Meg enables her to do that and to take the ball onto the gain line and to take some carries for herself, which was pleasing.
It works really, really well. It generally works really well, and it's only going to start. Obviously, we've got to remember that these are players that have not, they're playing together for the first time this season. Obviously, Meg coming in from WXV, so didn't have that, haven't did that pre-season time to build that connection up with Tash, but it is developing, and that's really, really good to see. They're both leaders. Obviously, Stash is club captain, but Meg Jones did an Instagram post, probably on all her socials as well. But you know, it looked like she was giving that talk in that huddle after the game, and stuff like that as well. So that they're both leaders, and they both bring different strong attributes to the game. Obviously, that in terms of what they offer to defenses. So yeah, absolutely. I think that relationship will only grow. I think for the listeners and just general Tigers fans who are probably still not convinced, just please, if you can, watch the game on TNT and just see, because the highlights don't really do it justice. But you know, don't just take our word for it. Either go to the game yourself on Saturday at 1 o'clock at Matthew Woods Welford Road, or watch on TNT Sports if the TNT Sports app plays ball. That's out of our control. But do watch and see how well that relationship is building, and kind of how, like, and Quinn's generally really struggled to kind of contain it, because not only are they both really good at just the general kicking game, they're both, you know, Meg has got really fantastic footwork. Stash is very much like Pollard in that is actually a physical pet player. She is a threat ball in hand. So that enables the defenses to just kind of keep on their toes and stuff. And yeah, I think what was the really good thing about, again, like, obviously it was such a privilege just for me personally to watch the women's team for the first time in the flesh for at Matthew Woods Welford Road. And then I was able to actually see like Stash play properly for the first time as well. And then that made me think, okay, like, yeah, this relationship we've got with Stash at 10, with Meg Jones either 12 or 13, it is something that's really, really good going forward. So yeah, that's going to be really, really exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing how that grows and what we can offer Bristol on Saturday.
Yeah, and I've got some stats overall from the season so far that PWR have compiled, and I think it says the amazing platform that we're starting to build. And I know it's not really visible in scorelines, or it hasn't been, because if you're looking at our win-loss ratio, we haven't yet won a game. The scorelines have been getting narrower. We've had some really competitive games, but actually, if you look at stats, we are in a lot. We're either topping some of these stat lists for so far this season, or we're in somewhere in the top fives of the list of players this season. So, for example, we are topping the list of successful tackles made, and that is by Becky Noon, who's made so far this season 101 successful tackles. Also, in that list is Morgan Richardson, who has made 87 successful tackles so far this season. If we look over to dominant tackles, actually going back to our player profile, Talia Brodie is in the list because she's made 8 dominant tackles so far this season, alongside KMA, who's also made 8 dominant tackles. So you can start to see this is where our defense is not only improving enough to see it, but actually we're in some of these top stat tables. So that gives me hope if we're able to shut down the likes of Sarah Byrne, or to shut down any defense so far going forward this season. There's also a nice little head-to-head that I'm going to go to. But before I go to that, Becky Noon is topping another stats table again. She's topping attacking breakdown arrival stats with 147. And Morgan Richardson is also on that table. She's made 119 attacking breakdown arrivals. That's amazing. Again, it does speak to what we're trying to play with. And I think, yeah, our defense hasn't had the most strong of starts this season, but the fact that we're now topping those tables and we can see defensive improvements from the Quins game gives me real, real, real hope. There is a nice little head-to-head if we're looking for kind of Leicester Tigers and Bristol Bears for the weekend, because topping the line-out steals is Eva Donaldson, who's had five line-out steals, but then topping the line-out throws one attempted is Bristol Bears player Lark Atkin-Davies. So here we've got a top line-out stealer potentially playing against a top line-out throws one attempted player, which is a nice little line-out separate battle, a nice little head-to-head that we're going to potentially see this weekend.
Yeah, that's going to be really exciting. And going back to what I was talking earlier in the Harlequins games review about our tactics, about where we were placing jumpers in the defensive line-out, if we get that spot on this weekend and can really target Bristol, that might be something that we can really look to disrupt, look to get our own hands on the ball, because that's something I want to see as well. I want us to see in the first half, because I don't know if you agree with me here, Jess, but I don't, like, obviously we've talked a lot about like not having a fast start and having slow starts. I don't think that was the case against Quins. I thought we were on it. It was just that we weren't on the ball enough. But I think for Bristol, you know, we don't, to prevent the likes, I'm not sure, is Jazz Joyce injured? I'm not sure if she is playing, but you know, even outside of the fact that they haven't got Jazz, even if Jasmine Joyce is injured, like they've got dangerous players like you know, Lark Atkinson, Atkin-Davies, like she's really good at getting the ball across that back line, you know, making sure that we're not getting the ball to Sarah Byrne in the wild channels and just keeping her in the scrums, you know, making sure that we're keeping good possession of the ball, whether that's through kicks, whether that's ensuring we're not knocking on in possession and those kind of things. That's something that I do want us to focus on as well. But yeah, another really exciting matchup.
Yeah, it is exciting. And I keep coming back to, and I've had another scan through this stats document, and I keep seeing Tigers players in these stats documents, which just proves how we're starting to grow and improve as a team. I mean, obviously, Meg Jones is in a lot of the attacking stats, but Becky Noon is there for successful tackles. As we said, Talia Brody there for dominant tackles, line-out steals. We are showing an immense amount of kind of solid platforms for us to build on. It's just really, really important for me, and I don't think there is a stat on who's had the most penalties so far this season, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was us, if we've had penalties given against us. Because that is the one thing for me that really stops us against Quins. And if we want to get possession, firstly, against Bristol, we have to reduce our penalty count. I think that is, like you, I think we were mentally switched on for Quins in that first quarter. I just think the penalties just stopped us getting any possession at all. I know that possession stat was 60-40 against us. You know, yeah, it felt like 80-20 in that first quarter, the possession stats against us, because we were unable to get the ball because of repeated infringements. But what was pleasing is how we reacted to the referee and then put those adjustments in place. It's hopefully we learn and maybe take those rolling away improvements and carry them forward into next week. But if I see less penalties conceded, certainly in the first quarter, I know we're starting the game off really, really well next week. And if we can start the game off really, really well and give away less penalties, we are 100% in with a shout.
Yeah, no, I agree. And yeah, so if just to repeat again, it's at 1 o'clock on Saturday at Matterley Woods, Welford Road. It is on TNT Sports. So please, if you can, please make your way to the game. We've got a really good crowd at the doubleheader last week. You know, if you can, please do get yourselves down there or switch on TNT Sports. I unfortunately will be unable to do either, because I will be on the plane to La Rochelle, because I am going to go on my first ever European trip abroad to see the lads in France, which I am so, so, so looking forward to. So quick shout out to my uncle and my dad for like a joint Christmas present from both of them to allow me to go to La Rochelle, which is going to be ace. And I'm so looking forward to that. But Jess, are you going to be able to go down to the game this weekend or potentially watch on TNT?
I am just checking what we're doing as a father-daughter duo. I'm certainly potentially we're both free, but certainly if not, we'll be tuning in on TNT Sports to watch it. As I also think I've got some boxes to unpack, because although I moved in about a year ago, I've still got boxes to unpack. But let's not talk about my failure to unpack almost a year on from moving into this new flat. Yeah, but we're going to try and go. I've got to check in and see what my dad's doing. If not, we'll definitely watch it on TNT. I think the most pleasing thing for Tigers fans, I guess, is this doesn't at all clash with the La Rochelle game. They're on completely different days. So you could go to Matthew Elliwood's Welford Road, see Bristol Bears visit us, see us beat Bristol Bears, kicking off at 1 p.m. And then the following day, put your feet up and watch the men beat La Rochelle, which would equally be amazing. So they're both doable. I think that's a really exciting opportunity, because if they had clashed, annoyingly, because it's the European. If there was a clash, obviously people would have stayed home and watched it on TNT. I'm not criticizing people for that. It's a European fixture. That's massive. But equally so, this Bristol game is massive for the club as well. So there's an opportunity to not only support the women's team, but to support the club as a whole. We know rugby in this country isn't in the best financial positions it could be. So we all have an opportunity to go and pack out Matthew Elliwood's Welford Road, or certainly pack out the Tradeview stand, and put some money in the club by buying a coffee, a beer, a pie, whatever it is, and to help out Tigers and to support Tigers financially and vocally by making your voice hoarse every time we tackle Sarah Byrne. So there's opportunities for Tigers fans aplenty this weekend, but that is it for our pod. So Jacob, very quickly, hit me with your prediction for the weekend, please. Not for La Rochelle, but hit me with your, because we already know Tigers men are going to beat La Rochelle, but hit me with your score prediction for when Bristol Bears come to Matthew Elliwood's Welford Road.
Oh, I don't know, because I think we haven't really talked about this, but Bristol, like we talked about all the players they've got on their roster, they have been a bit hit and miss this season in the PWR. They've got some good results and then they've also got some bad results. And, you know, so there is inconsistency there. And, you know, I think we can target that. And, you know, we should, it's hard because, you know, yes, there's all these stats that we can talk about. You know, you've listened to us ramble on for God knows how long about how well that we played on Saturday night. But, you know, yes, we are still searching for that win, and that is still a mental block to get over. But there is generally so many positives that we can take forward from Saturday evening that we can continue to do against Bristol. So they're inconsistent. I'm an optimist. It's gonna, yeah. I think the scoreline is not gonna be anything like what it was in the cup. So the scoreline will be within a converted try. And I think it'll again probably be the case of we are in it with 10 minutes to go. So that's my general score prediction.
Yeah.
Tigers by one. I've done it. Tigers by one. Tigers by one.
Tigers by one. I'm going Tigers by five. Consistent, and yes, Tigers by five, which I know I think I said like Tigers by four or Tigers by five last week. Tigers were in with, were, oh, we almost did that, but yeah, Tigers by five is my prediction this week. Yeah,
solid. But anyway, go on the girls, and yeah, go on the lads and La Rochelle as well. That's gonna be so class. Looking forward to a great weekend of rugby for Leicester Tigers Rugby Club.